It's 12 o'clock, and you're in tune to KZSU Stanford. It's time once again for another edition of the Lunch Special, but I need to let you know that this portion of KZSU's broadcast, the views or opinions expressed by the host DJ or their guests on this portion of the broadcast, do not represent the views or opinions of the Leland Stanford Junior University or its associates. We thank you for tuning into this KZSU 90.1 FM broadcast, and welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special.
Ricordi sbocciavano le viole con le nostre parole, non ci lasceremo mai, mai e poi mai. Vorrei dirti ora le stesse cose, ma come fa un presto amore ad appassire le rose? Così per noi l'amore che strappa i capelli è perduto ormai, non resta che qualche svogliata carezza e un po' di tenerezza. E quando ti troverai in mano quei fiori appassiti al sole d'un aprile ormai lontano, li rimpiangerai, ma sarà la prima che incontri per strada che tu coprirai d'oro per un bacio mai dato, per un amore nuovo. E sarà la prima che incontri per strada d'oro per un bacio mai dato, per un amore nuovo. E te ne vai, Maria, fra l'altra gente che si raccoglie intorno al tuo passare. Siete gli sguardi che non fanno male nella stagione di essere madre. Sai che fra un'ora forse piangerai, poi la tua mano nasconderà un sorriso. Gioia e dolore hanno il confine incerto nella stagione che illumina il viso. Ave Maria, adesso che sei donna, ave alle donne come te, Maria, femmine un giorno per un nuovo amore, povero, ricco, umile e
stagione che stagioni non sente.
And welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special here on KZSU Stanford, this beautiful, sunny Monday afternoon, the 7th day of June, 2010. I'm your host today, Bird, and Professor of Music Theory and Composition, Giancarlo Aquilante, is our guest today. Welcome to KZSU.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you've been here for quite a while at Stanford. You're no stranger to this campus. And you're a professor of music theory and composition. You brought some music today that's kind of a snapshot of your musical world, how you got influenced, and then where it took you from there. And being a professor of composition with a PhD, you compose music yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So some of the songs that we're going to hear today in this hour are compositions you've written.
Some of, yeah, the last track that we're going to hear, there is some music that I wrote, and the music that I brought here, it's sort of the most significant songs, and could be pop tunes or classical pieces that have influenced somehow my compositions.
Talk about those last two pieces. That was the same singer on each piece, right?
Yes. This is a singer, and his name is Fabrizio De André. He died about 10 years ago, and he's written all these songs that has to do with people that have been forgotten by everyone, by society. So homeless people, people that are alone, people that are poor. And he always took care of those characters forgotten by everyone.
The guy was kind of a social activist.
He was definitely was a social activist. Yes.
And you mentioned off mic too that he was a poet as well, right?
He's regarded as a poet as well, and some of his songs and texts has been we found down in books of literature.
Now, how was he an influence on your life?
As a kid, I always remember listening to his songs. So see, his somehow always been influenced and fascinated by those songs.
Now, would you hear it on the radio, or would your parents have the records of it?
I had records, and I would listen on the radio. I would sing them with friends of mine.
Hmm. And since we're on the radio, was radio an influence? What part of your musical upbringing did radio play?
Oh, that was pretty much the only way to hear music.
Really?
Besides, we had recordings, of course, but they were not as popular and not available as they are today.
And was it just Italian radio you would get to hear? Because in Europe, I don't know if they have the same restrictions as we do here in the States. And can you hear radio from other countries in Europe?
Not back then. It was hard to get those stations. Of course, there was no internet, but we could definitely get music outside the Italian boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And were you influenced by that too, by other musics from other places?
Not as much, I have to say. Mostly by Italian music, but I didn't dislike other countries' music as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you brought a great collection of tunes here, and why don't we go ahead and get into this? So those were more of the pop oriented. And the early stuff, huh?
Yes.
Kind of tell the story of this, too, because you've set this song list out in an order, right?
Right. So the next song is more a real pop singer. His name is Claudio Baglioni. He's the typical pop singer who would write songs about love and, you know, those kinds. So it's more standard pop singers. And but
what year is this from? The 60s, 70s?
The two songs that we heard before, they were in from the 70s.
Okay.
But this song that we're about to hear is more recent. I think it was written in 1992.
Oh, okay.
Cosa in te amare, non ti lasciare un motivo né una colpa, ti ho fatto male per non farlo alla tua vita, tu eri in piedi contro il cielo e io così. Il mio, io e te, che facemmo invidia al mondo, avremmo vinto mai contro un miliardo di persone, e una storia va a buttare, sapessi andarci.
And welcome back. Here today with Professor of Music Theory and Composition, Giancarlo Aquilante. And I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Close enough.
Okay, Professor. Thank you very much. And that was some beautiful music there. And once again, music that you've been influenced by as a younger person, right?
Yes.
And you set that one up. Now you have a special two-piece set coming up that you want to talk about a little bit.
Of course, being a classical musician, also classical music has played a big influence in my compositions. And the opera is so much part of Italian life. It seems almost a stereotype, but
wasn't it invented in Italy?
It was.
Did I? Opera, yeah, I thought I heard
the
that
opera
once.
Is an Italian invention.
Yeah, from a long time ago, right?
The first opera was performed in 1600.
Okay.
So, right.
500 years, 400 years.
Yes.
Wow.
So, I'm from a small town named Jesi, and there is an opera house, and every year there is a season where several operas are produced and performed. And as a kid in elementary school, I remember they would take us to hear the dress rehearsals.
Mm.
So that has been part of my life since I was a little kid. And not just for me, for most of the Italians and most of the musicians, opera is so present in our life. So the next two songs that I'd like to play are from the opera La Traviata by Giuseppe Verdi. And the first is the opening of the opera, the overture. And the orchestration of this particular piece has influenced some of my compositions. I sort of, in quote, copied these ideas from Verdi. Not the content, but the way he treats the instruments. So he starts with these violins up high, and it was the inspiration of one of my compositions. And then the second is an aria sung by Luciano Pavarotti. Is this the drinking scene from La Traviata?
Hmm. Let's listen.
Thank you. là fuggevo, fuggevo la sideria voluta, liviane i dolci freniti che suscita l'amore, poiché quell'occhio al cuore ogni possente va.
For this Monday afternoon, and opera being invented in Italy, we have Italian professor of music theory and composition with us today, Giancarlo Acquallante, from right here at Stanford University. That was powerful, man. That was the late, great Luciano Pavarotti, right? He was Italian, right?
He's definitely Italian.
You guys must have been way proud of him, huh?
Very proud of him, yes. He's one of the many good singers that we had. Unfortunately, he passed away, last year or a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It was a big loss for our music world.
But that right there was a big influence on you, huh?
Absolutely.
That whole opera.
Yes.
And now that we're closer to the bottom of the hour, I do want to get into a little bit about you. You're from a little town called, I don't want to mispronounce it now, Jesi?
Jesi.
Jesi. And that's on the Italian, basically on the Italian East Coast?
It's, yes.
Or close to it?
It's close to the East Coast, only a few miles from the water.
Mm-hmm. Opposite, I guess, Yugoslavia is right across the water, right?
Right, right.
All that. And you went to college at the Italian Conservatory,
mm-hmm.
and you graduated there in 1982.
Right.
And then you taught, and that went on until 1992, and then you came to Stanford to study.
Right.
And that was for post-grad studies to get your PhD.
Yes. In music, we call it, in composition, we call it DMA, Doctoral of Musical Arts.
Oh, okay.
But it's the equivalent of a PhD.
And did you have any intention of staying here and teaching when you first arrived?
Yes and no. You know,
kind of like it'd be nice if they offered you the job.
It would be nice if they offered. I always thought if they would offer a position, you know, it would be hard to refuse it.
And obviously it was.
Yeah.
You graduated in 96, in 1996 from your post-grad studies here at Stanford, right?
Yes.
And then they offered you a job.
They offered me a position for a year, then a year became two, and then three, and then four, and I've been here since.
They just kept extending it?
They kept extending it, and I would say that by now I'm pretty settled here at Stanford.
Mm-hmm. And you are a professor, not a lecturer?
I'm actually, I'm a senior lecturer.
Whoa.
Yes.
Now, how does that work as far as professors have tenure, right? Do senior lecturers get tenure too?
Yeah, senior lecturers, it's more or less, it's like a lecturer with tenures, if you like it.
Oh.
And my position is renewed every 3 years, and unless I do something dumb, is usually to redo it, and I'm not planning to do anything dumb.
But what would that be? I mean, you love music.
I don't know what that'd be, but probably.
You're also the director of the Stanford Wind Ensemble, and I've learned quite a bit from you today about that. I didn't realize that's a touring ensemble. You guys actually go on the road, not every year, but you've toured
parts
of the world, right?
This is a group of about 40 to 45 Stanford students, and they all, with few music majors, most of them are not music majors, so they might be studying anything from engineering to biology, you name it. But all of them, they have a great passion for music, and so we get together. We rehearse twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays for 2 hours each time.
Mm-hmm.
And we perform once or twice a quarter here at Stanford, and occasionally we go outside the Stanford walls and other university here in the States. And every 3 to 4 years, I take them to international tours, and those tours could be anywhere in the world.
Hmm. And these students you mentioned, they're not completely dedicated to music. They have other interests. They're usually studying some other subject. You said a lot of them come from the engineering department. Is there a waiting list to get into the Stanford Wind Ensemble? Are there more kids that want to get into it than are in it?
It depends. You know, you have to. There are auditions.
Some years there's more, some years less.
Yeah. Well, the number is pretty steady, around the 40, 45. But you have to meet some musical standards, otherwise you wouldn't get in.
Mm-hmm. And I also, in talking off mic, I was curious to see how that felt, you being a dedicated music professional, right? When you first got here and took the position, you're coming into contact with students that wasn't their first love and that wasn't their first study. They were studying something else. Did that catch you kind of funny? Like, well, wait a minute, man. These aren't dedicated musicians. These are guys that are people that are folks that are studying other things. So maybe it's not going to be as I did. Was it like that? How was it for you when you encountered that?
Well, again, I come from the conservatory system where music is it. We don't study anything else. So we dedicate our entire time, all our energy to music. And when I came here again, the fact that students were studying other things and dedicating only part of their day to music, and I thought this is kind of funny. This is not going to work here. But you have to, you know, it's been working for so many years. So I said, well, they must have a system where somehow they make it work. And
what did you find out?
I found out basically two things. One, that these students, they have a great passion for music, so they might not dedicate a lot of time to music, but the time that they actually do dedicate to music, it's very intense. They're very busy, so they only have a few hours to dedicate to their extracurriculum stuff, in this case music. And let's not forget that those are Stanford students, and if they have 1 hour, that hour is going to be very productive. So somehow this system that we have in the music department, and this is applies to the wind ensemble, apply to the orchestra, apply to our choirs, most of them are not music majors. And somehow, however, we managed to have ensembles. They're pretty good in quality, and some of those musicians are definitely first class, even though their primary interest might be, again, something else.
Yeah, Supreme Court justice or
yes,
engineering major or
right.
or the
or
next
knows?
Person to
God knows yeah, what else?
Yeah, the next person to cure cancer. There's a lot of that stuff going on around here. You've done three international tours, you mentioned, with the Stanford Wind Ensemble. You're not going, it's always in the summer that you guys go out, right?
It's usually in the summer, right after commencement, in the second half of June. And we're planning to go again in the summer 2011, providing that we do not have another financial crisis.
You mean the world or the United States or Stanford?
Yeah, all of them.
Do you have to get funding outside the university for that?
Well, the students, they do make contributions to it.
Well, they have a bake sale?
Yeah. We tried to raise money from a lot of different sources. And
do they kind of pay their own way, though, too?
Not the entire things, but they make a contributions, and some of them, they might not be able to make even that small contribution, so the university helps them.
Oh,
and the music department makes a big effort to make sure that no one is left behind because of financial reasons.
Oh, that's good.
And we have donors, and, you know, alumni, Stanford, big donors, in particular, the Bing family has been helping us.
Really?
They've been helping a lot of things on campus, as we know, including our tours, the orchestra and wind ensembles.
Yeah. You guys ever have fundraiser shows where you put on a show?
And yeah. We do some of our concerts. The money that we make out of it, they go to fund those tours.
Now, Blue, the producer of the show, mentioned that you had a show on May 29th. That was your, was that the last one of the year?
Yeah, that was our last concert that we had.
Was that here on campus?
It was here on campus.
How did that go?
It went very well. We had a guest conductor from Italy, and also one of our students, Rami, a trombone player, he played a solo with the group, even though he's a study mechanical engineer. He's a grad student.
One of those guys.
Yet, he's one of those guys. He played this solo, this piece, this trombone concerto by Lonnie Grondahl, and he did an excellent job.
Now, you're the director of the wind ensemble. You play in it as well, or are you more? Is that more of a background position?
No, I'm the basically the conductor, what you would say.
So when you have a guest conductor, you have to step off.
Yeah, I do step off.
So you just, and so you're not even playing with them at that point.
No,
you're nowhere in the picture in the performance.
Well, I do prepare them during the quarter, and then the guest conductor usually comes the last two or three rehearsals, and he gets all the glory.
How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel great because, you know, it doesn't matter. And I do the same sometimes. I go guest conducting some other places. And so that's the way we do it. And we call these guest artists because there is, you know, it's nice to have a different approach and different ideas. And even for me, I have something to learn from them. And certainly for the students, it's a good experience.
So can a guest conductor that comes in, can they actually affect the piece in a different way that you would?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, that's the whole
point. By the way they conduct.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, they might have different ideas on different philosophy about the piece and different, you know, from small things like tempos or dynamics or even the whole feel or the way they intend a certain part versus other. That's why we bring those guest artists and guest conductors, so to have a different approach, to see different philosophy on how a piece might be interpreted.
Now, you've written pieces yourself, quite a lot, actually.
Yes.
And they've been in different, sometimes you've written for the ensemble, sometimes you've been, somebody has you write a piece for them.
Yeah, so I've written music for all kinds of medias, musical medias. So choral music, orchestral music, music for symphonic band, wind ensemble, chamber music, and you name it.
And you brought some today.
Yes.
Do we have one queued up?
Sorry?
Is that going to be our next song, one of your compositions?
No, next song I would like to play another song that's been very important in my life. Not in particular these songs, but the person who wrote the song. So this next song was written by Paolo Ugoletti, and he was my first teacher in composition.
Oh. At the conservatory in Italy?
Yes. Okay. So he was my first teacher in composition, and he was one of those composers who wrote very avant-garde music and very obscure and hard to understand sometimes. And then he had a midlife crisis about music, and he decided that that was not what he wanted to continue to do because he felt like he had no connections with the audience. So he started to write some kind of music that is much more accessible, if you like it. It's easier to understand. It's for the people. He started to write for the people. And this next song is part of a CD that he produced a few years ago. So it's recent, and it's a piece for viola and piano, and has to do with Irish music.
Let's check it out. And welcome back to it. Here today with Giancarlo Aquilante, professor, senior lecturer in the music department here at Stanford in music theory and music composition. And this is an American piece that you wanted to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, so we've been talking all these songs and classical pieces that had influenced my composition. And of course, American music has played a big role since I came here. And this is a Salon Mexico by Aaron Copland. And even though I knew this composer, the American composer, while I was living in Europe, I really never got into knowing those pieces, like looking at the scores, actually performing in them. And to discover that the American classical world has a lot to teach to the world. And this is Aaron Copland, of course, is one of maybe probably the most well-known composers in the States and around the world. And I believe that he's a first-class composer that deserves to be up there with the great master of the European traditions like Mozart or Beethoven or Brahms.
Wow, that's a mouthful coming from you. I mean, you would be the one to know that. Is he still alive?
No, he died in 1990.
Oh, wow, so 20 years.
Or 90, I think, 90 or 92, if I remember.
Mm-hmm. But left some great music, huh, along the way?
He definitely wrote. I respect him, and I call him as the voice of the American people.
Interesting. Well, now we're going to finally get to that portion of the show that features some of your compositions.
Yes.
Why don't you go ahead and set up this first one?
So the first piece that we're going to hear, it's a choral piece that I wrote only a few years ago. And it's a choral piece. The title is Ubi Caritas. It's a religious song. It's for choir, four parts. And the recording that you're going to hear here has been done by the Stanford Chamber Chorale. It's one of our ensembles in the music department. And the director is my colleague, Professor Stephen Sanoit, who's also the chair of the music department.
Thank you.
original composition by Giancarlo Acquallante, professor and senior lecturer here at Stanford in music theory and composition. And lest we talk too much and not be able to fit in all these songs, we don't know how long that last song is. Why don't you go ahead and just set this next song up? What about this next song, Giancarlo?
So this is completely different. It's a piece for a string quartet. This is something I wrote in the 2004, and it was dedicated to another professor of mine in composition. His name was Glenn Glasso, that he passed away a few years before that composition, and this was written in his memory. And the some of the music was taken from something that he didn't finish. So I took some of his music that was incomplete, and it's not like I finished his composition. I just was inspired of some of his musical idea that he had down on paper. And this is the third movement, and is a musical fugue, what you would say. So it has to do with counterpoint. We're not going to go into the details, otherwise we'll never finish. But it's a fugue for a string quartet, and is based on this technique that is 12-tone. It has to do with the 12-tone. So it's completely different than what we heard from the choral piece.
Very good. Thank you. You know, you never have enough time in real life. We're hearing the compositions of Giancarlo Aquilante right now, and we're down to our last 5 minutes, and we found out some stuff off mic. One of your latest projects, Giancarlo, and we'll have to talk about this in the fall when you come back from your summer vacation, but you've been commissioned to orchestrate the songs of the Grateful Dead.
Yes, yes.
And you've been working with Bob Weir on this.
Yeah, I see him every week.
Amazing.
We're becoming good friends.
Were they still playing here? No, they weren't still playing here by the time you got here. They used to play at Frost Amphitheater all the time, and then they actually got kind of told that they can't play here anymore. So you never got a chance to see him at Frost,
no,
did you?
No.
But you're working with Bob Weir, and you'll, so that'll be the Grateful Dead music played by an orchestra, and you're going to be writing all that out.
Right. And it's written in a way that the band is actually going to play with the symphony, so they're going to be playing together.
Yeah. Bob Weir always wanted to do that.
He seems very excited about these projects.
Well, you know what it is. He wanted to get in Davies Symphony Hall, and they would never let him in with the band unless he brought somebody like you.
We'll see how this first concert, which will be in October, will go. If this is successful, if the audience will appreciate it, will like it, or and the critics will, it's probably something that we're going to repeat somewhere else.
Where's the first concert going to be?
It will be in Marin County, and it's done. The symphony that I'm writing for at the moment is Marin Symphony.
Okay, wow.
So we'll have to see how it goes. If it's successful, which I hope he will be. And so Bob is, his intention is to bring it around the country somewhere else.
Interesting.
Maybe pop orchestras or any symphony that might be interested in doing it. And doing a concert with them.
Wow. And the pieces that you write, that'll be his book that he'll take around, right?
Right, right.
Wow. Does Bob come down and see you down here?
So far he has a wonderful house and a great studio. So
you go up there.
It's better than my office here at Stanford. So that's where we do most of the work, yeah.
Giancarlo Aquilante, I want to thank you for coming today. If folks want to get a hold of you about your work or your music or anything?
They're welcome to look at my webpage, giancarloaquilante.com. There's my email there listed if they want to send me some feedback or they want to ask some questions, that I'll be happy to talk to them and answer that.
And please come back in the fall.
It's a deal. We'll be back in the fall.
Okay.
Maybe after this concert with the Grateful Dead, and I'll let you know how they...
No, come before.
All right.
Because me and Blue want to get some tickets for it.
Okay. They're going to be expensive.
That's okay. We'll get on the guest list or something.
Yes,
you know, we're good at that.
I'll do my best.
Okay. Thanks a lot. You have a great summer. And just stay in touch for when you get back.
And thank you for inviting me. And thanks to all the audience that have been listening.
Thank you.